Oh my God. In an interview with BJPen.com, he said, "If I take my glasses off, I only see 50%, but it never hindered me in a fight. I see three faces. If I hit the middle one, that's fine." What the fuck?
Yeah, right?
All right. Welcome back to episode 4 of the Two Fight Fans podcast, a podcast where we talk about the random musings, events, upcoming drama, whatever really we want to talk about involved in the world of combat sports. I am one of your fans, Colin.
And I'm the other, Stuart.
Today, we are doing part 2 of our preview and predictions for the marquee UFC 300 event. And we are now talking about the main card, the 5 fights, 3 of which are title fights. At first glance, these are all looking pretty good. I'm pretty excited for each one of these fights here.
Dan, I'll get my big bet off the top. I think none of these 5 fights go to a decision. And
really?
Yeah, I don't think any of these go to a decision. And do I wager that none get past the third round? That would only count for the title fights, really. Yeah, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say none of these fights make it past the third round. That's take that to the bank. That's my big
That's your big
bold
bet, huh?
Yeah, my big bold vanilla prediction.
Wow. Okay. Even though I haven't checked the betting lines if they've updated since last time recorded. Even though the Cody Brundage winning by decision is like a plus 1,000.
Yeah, he's not winning though. It's not gonna happen. I rewatched his last fight where he had the kind of like rampage slam, and
The mini rampage slam.
Yeah, the issue is if you're in the position to do the rampage slam, you've already gotten yourself basically fully triangle choked, and so that doesn't like really prove he's what a savvy grappler. It proves that he's strong, but Bo Nickel's submissions, even a triangle, we've seen one of those on one of the Dana White Contender Series fights. He's pretty slick with that and gets it locked in pretty quickly. So, but then let's jump into it. My favorite division, middleweight.
Yeah. All right. Well, you've already pretty much said what you think. So give it to me.
Well, it's definitely going to be Bo Nickel. The thing I'm going to be interested in seeing is, Bo Nickel has shown in the past, none of his fights have gone to the second round, but you see, like, as he begins to chain attacks together, he gets, like, slowly more desperate and wild when he doesn't get, like, the immediate efficacy that he's looking for. Even when he was striking, right, he, in that, when he fought, I think it was Woodburn last time and knocked him out, threw a pretty good, maybe southpaw, so rear straight, and kind of wobbled him, a nice hook, and then his follow-up, though, he kind of, like, bounced into the pocket, he, like, did a little hop, and then started throwing, and his hands progressively got lower as they returned to his guard, they got closer and closer to just, like, being down by his sides and kind of, like, swinging from his hips. So I wonder if Cody Brundage can survive long enough to where we can see kind of the breakdown of Bo Nickel's, like, the systemized way he attacks normally, if he it relies kind of like Khamzat Chimaev so much on just overwhelming that if someone can survive, they'll fall off. But I don't think Cody Brundage will survive. I think it'll probably be a first round finish, probably submission by Bo Nickel. So yeah, mark that. And then also, if Bo Nickel wins, I just came up with the best matchmaking the UFC might have ever seen.
Okay.
Have him fight Chris Weidman next. And then we'll really know, is he ready for top 15? And if Chris Weidman can beat him, we go, hey, there's some life in Chris Weidman. He beat Bo Nickel. I think that's the fight. Unless you want to jump Bo Nickel way, way higher in the division and have him fight, like, I don't know, Marvin Vettori or something.
I don't know. I mean, this would be definitely, like, a more, like, progressive stepping stone to, like, build him up a little bit, especially given his, like, experience and pedigree. So I do like that if he does win. Actually, even if he loses, like, I still think that would be a good, like, matchup for him.
Well, no, if he loses, you got to give Cody Brundage the chance to fight Chris Weidman, because I would pick Chris Weidman still to beat Cody Brundage. So,
jeez.
Oh, but yeah, I think it'd be good with Nickel. Yeah, I don't know.
So you really don't believe in Cody Brundage, huh?
I don't. I mean, he's a good, he's for a UFC caliber middleweight fighter. He belongs in the UFC, and he's strong. Yeah, and the dude doesn't, like, you know, he doesn't give up. His fights, the little bit I rewatched, they're entertaining. They're not, you know, he's not a boring fighter. But I don't see anything that he does that would make me go like, oh wow, this guy is gonna be, you know, shooting straight to the top.
Yeah.
He's been fighting since 2021 in the UFC. He's got, you know, a loss, two wins, three losses, two wins, right? He's kind of ping-ponging around. And none of these guys are really outstanding middleweights as it is. So it's just, I'm good for him. He's going to get this shot. If he can survive, I think he can do much, much better. With every minute that this fight goes on, I think he has his chances of winning go up pretty significantly.
Yeah,
and he'll be, you know, if he makes it to round two, he'll be the first opponent of Bo Nickels to make it to round two. And that's, you know, there's a little win, little W for Cody.
Yeah.
But this is also, we know the UFC is trying to boost up Bo Nickels. So this is, they picked this fight specifically so Bo can shine.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah. So give me your pick.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, it does definitely seem like a slanted matchup there, you know, just Bo Nickel uses grappling and just kind of either ground and pounds or gets like a guillotine or rear naked choke on Cody Brundage. Yeah, it just seems one of those that they're definitely pushing one person, you know, trying to build them up. However, I do like what you said, you know, because even though you have a ton of wrestling experience fighting on the main stage of the UFC, you know, 3 5-round fights, if Cody can survive the first round, get him to expend a lot of that energy, all the, like, the adrenaline dump that comes with fighting at that level, he might be able to pick it off, you know, in second or third round, or maybe win by a decision. Think about it. A thousand betting line, man. But
I mean, it's definitely worth it if you've got, like, $4 to throw down. Why not?
But that's the degenerate gambler inside of me. But yeah, I think the smart pick is, like you said, Bo Nickel in the first round, either by submission or TKO.
Yeah, I think it definitely will be submission. I mean, maybe he'll be able to crack Cody and drop him. He knocked out Woodburn in his last fight, but my assumption is they'll engage in something. Bo Nickel does have a good lead hook, and he's a southpaw, so it's a right hook. He's got a good right hook. Might wobble Cody, take him down, and then we've already seen Cody is susceptible to rear naked chokes and triangle chokes, and those are the two submissions that Bo Nickel has on his record. So, yeah, I think it'll be. But then we get to watch Chris Weidman fight Bo Nickel, and that'll be fun. That'll be exciting.
All right, so we're pretty much in agreement here then on this one. Yeah. I think it's the only one where we're in agreement on everything.
Yeah. Oh well, we might be a little bit later. I think in our next fight, actually, Chucky Olives, Charles Oliveira against Arvin Saryukian.
Yeah.
Why don't you kick us off? What do you think about this fight? I know you're a huge Charles Oliveira fan.
I am. I remember, because I was in college when he, like, first started showing up, and he fought, I think in his second fight, it was Efren Escudero. The guy from I think he was also, Efren was from the WEC, right?
Yes.
This was, like, early in that merger. And I just remember watching the explosiveness and dynamics of him, like, how how explosive he was, both on his feet and how willing he was ready to go to the ground and like pull guard and just like basically swarm someone on the ground. And I was really impressed with that. And I remember texting one of my friends as soon as that fight finished, thinking like, yo, have you heard about this Charlo Rivera guy? Like, he's definitely going to be a champion one day. Like, holy crap. And I'm just a big fanboy of him now. Like, I really, really like Charles Oliveira.
It took him a long time to get to the championship, though.
I mean,
2010 is when he started in the UFC, and he didn't get the title till when, 2021?
Yeah.
11 years?
He would build up so much momentum. Like, he'd win like three or four in a row and then lose one. And it was just like this crazy, like, and that's how competitive the lightweight division is. It's not like some of these other ones where, you know, you string a few fights, maybe a loss here and there, and then you get your title shot. It was like, no, he was like grinding the whole time.
Well, and remember, he fought at featherweight for a lot of the front half of his UFC career, right? After he lost, so he beat Efren Escudero, lost to Jim Miller, no contest against Nick Lentz, lost again to Donald Cerrone, and then he dropped to featherweight for like 10 fights.
Did he fight that long?
Yeah, and then he lost to Max Holloway in a number one contender fight. Right, that was that weird one where like he had an esophagus injury like 2 minutes into the fight. Yeah, and then he came back and fought at, or he missed weight quite a bit with Miles Jury.
Yeah, a bunch of times.
Yeah, and then lost to Anthony Pettis and Ricardo Lamas, and then finally moved up to lightweight. And then he went on that streak. Because something to be said about him just like really diminishing his actual physical ability by cutting so much weight. Because he's, even now, he's huge.
Oh, yeah.
Like, team against Poirier and Gaethje and Chandler, like pretty solidly 155, like good size lightweights. And he's just as big, if not bigger than them.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
but then what about Armin? What about this giant Hulk who's coming in from Armenia in the lightweight division?
Yeah. I mean, so here's the thing, like, admittedly, I haven't seen as much of Armin. That being said, he hasn't fought nearly as much as Charles Oliveira in the UFC as well. But from the few that I've seen, it seems like, you know, Armin is just a really strong grappler who uses his grappling to gain advantages and kind of like you said, like use his weight and muscle people around there. I think if it goes to the ground, that's kind of like a very dangerous spot for him with Charles Oliveira, as opposed to like other of his opponents that he's done that to. So I'm going to say Charles Oliveira will win by submission in the third round.
Third round submission. It's interesting. Even though, so Charles is going to turn 35 this year. And although this isn't a title fight, so the, like, quote-unquote curse wouldn't apply, we know that people, like, at elite level, 170 pounds and under, when a 35-year-old faces a non-35-year-old, it does not go well unless your name is Tyron Woodley.
Yeah, he's not 35 yet, though. He's got six
That's
months.
That's true. Yeah, but only 6 months, not a long time, and he has some miles on him.
He does.
Like, yeah, it's, I had seen a stat recently about like the number of UFC fighters who have in their entire UFC career over 10 fight night bonuses, whether it's fight of the night, submission of the night, knockout of the night, or they call it performance of the night now. And he's the leader, I think, with 15, 14. I mean, that's, I think, probably the strength of this card, because I think Holloway is also one of the few fighters that has over 10 ones. Justin Gaethje has 12. Jim Miller has, I think, 13 or 14. So you got a lot of good people on this card that have a lot of performance bonuses, which means usually going to be a finish, usually going to be action. But back to Armin Saryukin and Oliveira. I don't know, right? Like, I actually think that if it goes to the ground, that's probably worse off for Oliveira than it is for Saryukin. Oliveira has, a reputation for like, oh wow, he's really, really amazing off his back and he's going to choke everyone out. But like recently, the Justin Gaethje fight, he got Justin's back. It didn't like go to the ground and then he swept Justin. He wobbled Justin and then immediately like took his back. Same thing with Dustin Poirier. He didn't submit Tony Ferguson, like, which was pretty astounding. It was a guillotine choke on Kevin Lee off of like a really bad shot. And then the rest of his submissions, a lot of them really are rear naked chokes, and it's not, hey, he's playing guard and then he sweeps and gets to the back. It's they're exchanging on the feet, he wobbles them, or his stand up is really what's dangerous, and then they turn away or they get to the fence and turn and he takes their back from there. So I think that his guard isn't overrated. It is extremely dangerous. But I think everyone sees the number of submissions he has and goes like, wow. And somehow conflates that with like the danger that he is off of his back. And so then they're like, it doesn't matter if he goes to the ground because look at all these chokes he has. But it's actually a lot of these aren't from playing guard. A lot of these are from being in a top position or having taken the back while they're standing or like as someone is falling. It isn't like, hey, we're in an active like chest to chest grappling situation. And then he outmaneuvers them to set up the submission. And we saw with Islam Makhachev, right? Like, if you have a really strong top game and you have really strong like wrestling fundamentals from the top position, that you can kind of smother Charles Oliveira's offense off of his back and eventually get to the choke. And I think Armin Saryukin is probably the closest to Islam Makhachev when it comes to having a top game like that. So I think if it goes to the ground, Armin might be able to do kind of what Islam Makhachev did and really kind of grind Charles Oliveira down. The thing is, Armin Saryukin, I don't see much like defensive awareness on the feet from him. So I really do think like this probably will be a stand-up affair. I think Armin Saryukin, he just knocked out Beneil Dariush. He's a young dude. I could see him being like, I have the power to knock out Charles Oliveira. Charles Oliveira gets like wobbled. He got wobbled against Gaethje, Michael Chandler, Dustin Poirier, right? But I think Charles Oliveira, his combinations are too good, and his technique is so good on the feet that I think that a lot of people think that they can take him, and then he hits them with one of his... I mean, he might have one of the most beautiful left hooks I've seen in MMA. The one he got Michael Chandler with was like the most textbook, this is exactly how you're supposed to throw a lead hook. So I actually think Charles Oliveira, I think he will win. I don't think it'll be submission, though. I think he'll TKO. I think he'll knock out Armin Saryukin. I think Saryukin will get over-aggressive on the feet. And Charles is just, he's just too good there and too dangerous. He's not just, like, good, but, like, he's very dangerous. So that's my inkling. I think it'll be a TKO for Charles Oliveira.
So you don't think that, like, okay, they're going on their feet, and because he's getting picked apart or getting, like, you know, overwhelmed on the feet, Armin would just default to his wrestling and try to go from there?
I think right, it could be, again, one of those, like, he's getting pieced up on the feet. He has a desperation shot, which immediately he's not in the best position. And then Charles immediately spins to the back. And now we've got the situation where, hey, another rear naked choke for Charles. I could see that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, like, kind of happening. Or kind of, like, wobbles them with his... Because Charles Oliveira is really unique in that when he, like, wobbles someone or knocks them, he doesn't always go for, like, just elbows and punches to, like, knock them out. Mm-hmm. He'll swarm, because while you're dazed, you're, like, confused, he just swarms on them and grabs, like, any limb or your neck and just starts cranking, you know? And which I think is fantastic and awesome, but...
Yeah. I do wonder, like, it's a little bit of a question of, like, do I trust him to stick to a game plan to where, like, if he wobbles Armin, not to run in? Because I think of anyone in the division, Armin and Islam Makhachev, the two guys, Charles should not be running in on to try to do any, like, just, ooh, let me just grab your stump of a neck that doesn't exist. like, I think that do I trust Charles to be disciplined and like, hey, hang back, you know, keep using his jab, keep using his straight punching. I think I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, especially because I don't know exactly when it was, but coinciding, and I don't see a ton of people talking about this, coinciding with the improvement in Charles Oliveira's striking was he was, I don't know, I know Justin Gaethje was legally blind, but Charles Oliveira as well had horrific eyesight, like really, really bad eyesight. You could see photos of him when he would wear his prescription glasses. They were like Coke bottles. They were so thick. And he had eye surgery. And so now he can see so much better, which gives him the ability to like, I mean, it's the same thing with like Justin Gaethje. Everyone attributes it to, oh, he lost to Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier, so he had to change his style. But right after that loss, that second loss to Dustin Poirier, he also went and got eye surgery. Because part of the reason he would just march in with his hands like on his head and like almost like put his head on people's chest when he fought them is because he couldn't see well enough to like track where their head was going. He had to physically touch them to kind of like know where they were in space. And now he doesn't have to do that. And I think that's the same thing with Charles. So,
oh my God. In an interview with BJPen.com, I didn't know, like, I knew he wore glasses, but I didn't know it was like this bad. He said, if I take my glasses off, I only see 50%, but it never hindered me in a fight. I see three faces. If I hit the middle one, that's fine. What the fuck?
Yeah, right? Like, he's got really bad eyesight. And that's another thing. Like, well, I know we're going to run long if we talk about this, but like, I think that's something that a lot of fight fans don't or I don't see enough credit or like attention paid to. Not that you can like ask everyone, hey, what's your prescription level, or like, do you have 20/20 vision? But like, people like Conor McGregor does have 20/20 eyesight, doesn't wear glasses, and you can tell like he sees everything. Like, his eyesight is really good within the cage. Same thing with like Sean Strickland, no glasses, no contacts, which allows him to like, I mean, you see him, like, you know, blocking punches with his hands really foolishly, but it's because he can see them coming at his face so much better than a lot of these guys who have, you know, just like most every other human, they have some level of poor eyesight. But yeah, Charles and Justin definitely had, like, actually bad, maybe you shouldn't be driving a motor vehicle eyesight, and yeah. we're still getting into fistfights. But you do notice, right? More strikes from range. More straight punching, not as much hooking, not as much like big swings from either one of them over the past few years. And that's because their eyesight has gotten better. So they can go, hey, I can reasonably guess that like if I throw this jab, that's exactly where that person's head is going to be. Whereas before, they used to have to like, I mean, Charles Oliveira used to like really just try to grab the back of the neck and dirty box, or like get into a clinch and strike from there. Mostly just because it's like, I need to know where the body is that I'm trying to hit. So yeah, I think Chucky Olives, yeah, TKO. I think Armin, I don't
Chucky
know.
Chucky Olives.
Yeah. That's a good nickname, right? You haven't heard that for him?
No.
Yeah, I think it was Ben Folks and Chad Dundas on the co-main event podcast were saying, because there was, at one point, I think their argument was there was too many Oliveiras. There's like 10,000 Oliveiras in the UFC. And they're like, you got to do something to like make him stand out. And they're like, well, what about Chucky Olives or Charlie Olives? And it's like, yeah, that's a good one. So Chucky Olives,
Chucky
I think
Olives.
TKO against Armin. Yeah, I mean, like, look, would I be surprised if Armin came in there and was able to out-grapple and kind of, like, absolutely, like, grind Oliveira into dust? No. Like, I'd be like, wow, that's really impressive. Let's get him back in there against Islam Makhachev. I still think Armin Saryukin is the biggest threat to Makhachev's title at the moment, but I think Charles Oliveira is I think Armin knocked out Beneil Dariush. I think he's got a taste that like, ooh, I've got power. He's a young dude as well, which I think it carries over, right? Sometimes these young guys, they get the taste of like one thing and they're like, ooh, I'm gonna do this now forever in all of my all of my fights. I'm going to try to knock them out. I'm going to try to, if it's a submission, hey, I'm only going to go for submissions. So I think that brain worm will be partially in there. And then Oliveira will be able to capitalize on that and knock him out or wobble him. And like you said, take the back. But you're betting on submission. I'm betting on only fists and elbows.
Okay. Do you have a round for it?
No, I mean, I don't think it'll go to a decision. I think it'll probably be round one or round two.
Oh. Okay.
I don't have an official bet on that, but I think the longer it goes, probably the less likely. Right, it'd be hard to go 10 minutes without there being, like, some actual serious grappling sequences going on.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I could see in the first, like, 3-4 minutes of the first round, you know, they're just trying to, like, feel each other out on the feet. Then they start swinging. You know, maybe Armin lands really hard on Charles Oliveira, and the same thing as Gaethje and Chandler and Poirier. He gets overexcited, and then... Yeah,
for, like, the first round, and then just...
Yeah.
That's kind of how I see that first round going. So, yeah. And then the second... You know, Charles Oliveira starts to stuff the takedowns, pick him apart with it. And then the third, he gets kind of desperate and, like, shoots for something or gets wobbled with Charles's shots. And then that's how he gets his submission. So just kind of building it up.
Yep, I feel you. I mean, it should be a good fight. And the biggest thing is, I'm really, even if it's fast or even if it's you know, just a few quick exchanges, it only goes one round. I'll be really interested to watch it closely to see, like, okay, do either of these guys have something that looks like it might challenge Islam Makhachev, because we already saw Armin wrestle with him. We already saw Oliveira fight him fully. I mean, they both fought, but yeah, to see what their improvements are, especially in the stand-up, right? Because that's the one area that Islam just keeps getting better at is the stand-up, and I've been really impressed with how good of a striker he is now. He's much better than Khabib ever was on the feet, even if he's not quite as freakishly athletic as Khabib. Alrighty.
All right, moving on to our first title fight, which again...
Title fight.
I hate the whole concept. Aside from the fact that, yes, if they're doing it, they get pay-per-view voids. Okay, fine. Like, I like that. That's good for the fighters. But it's a stupid fucking belt.
It is a stupid belt.
The BMF belt. And I think we can talk about that later on. But okay, let's just talk about this fight. Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway. What do you got?
I don't know. What do you think at first blush when you see this?
First blush.
Like when you just give it a little peeksy and you're like, ooh, what is this? What do you think? You see it from across the bar, you give it a wink. How you feeling?
I ain't giving it the wink. This is the thing that I see. When I see it, I'm just like, I admire it from the distance. I just know, like, it's so far out of my league. What the fuck are they doing in this shitty-ass bar right now? Like,
good. You know your place.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I know what's attainable. Mm-hmm.
Well, all the youth like to say, shoot your shot. You are a proud supporter of stay in your lane. That's your motto on life. Stay in your lane.
I like both these fighters a lot, and I think it's going to be like I think this one actually might go the distance. And just because they're both like insane, like
remember it's five rounds.
It is.
Yeah,
and I think Max is just going to slowly build over the not slowly this like. It's going to be pretty even, I think, in the exchange the first round or two, but then it's just like with the time, the endurance, just the amount that Max pours on, I think it's just going to build up and he's going to win like an overwhelming decision at the end. Like it's going to be very obvious. So I've got Max Holloway by decision.
By decision. Wow.
Yeah. But it's not like not a boring decision by far.
Oh, no. This could be when you look there's been best fights since like UFC 200, UFC 300, that 8 years. There's been polls. MMA Fighting has done it. I think MMA Junkie had their own list. But like Justin Gaethje was in, I think, two or three of them. He was in against Michael Johnson. He was in against Dustin Poirier. A couple places had the Eddie Alvarez fight there. Max Holloway was in against the Dustin Poirier fight. The Alexander Volkanovski fight with Max Holloway, like these two guys have been in some of the best fights over the last 10 years. And now they're both fighting. They're a little bit worse for wear than they were maybe over these past few years. So what do you say then to these people that argue that Max Holloway is really susceptible to leg kicks and Justin Gaethje has the hardest leg kicks in the UFC?
I mean, yes.
I defend your boy. I want to hear it.
Yeah. I mean, there's not much to defend. That's basically like That's exactly what it is. Like, he's just, that's always been his literal, like, weakness with that, you know? And, but I think Max also, at least in the past, has had an ability to sucker people into his game, and he can overwhelm them that way. But I do have a question about Max Holloway, now that I'm thinking about it more, because I always brought this up before, because a lot of times when he started to, you know, when he won the championship and was defending for a while, I didn't, his game never really changed or adjusted, you know? And when you have that much success, why would you, you know? You don't need to. But he never learned to defend or see the leg kicks. And I was wondering, like, is this a coaching thing? Is just this like a mentality thing? What's going on? But like, it just seems like to me, he doesn't have a coach that tells him this is what you do. Like, in all the interviews and all the like countdowns and things, I've never like seen really a lot of interviews with his coach. Now, maybe that's just the, like, it just seems like he does, like, Max kind of does his own thing. Not that he trains himself, but like, yeah, no. It's just like he falls back on his strength.
Yeah, I mean, I think he definitely, he has a specific style that he fights in. I know, and Max Holloway does not, he does not train himself. He's at Gracie Technics in Hawaii. And
but who's his actual coach, like his lead trainer?
Let's see. Darren Yap. He's got, God, I can't remember his name. I remember that Eugene Behrman really talked up and was like very impressed by Holloway's coach and like the game planning that his team does, especially in that second Alexander Volkanovski fight. Because even though he basically like I would actually argue like he does a lot more adjusting than most fighters. Like his base has always been stand up and primarily boxing. Yeah. Fundamentals within the stand-up. He does have kicks, but like he changes his stance. Luke Thomas always brings up, you know, in the Jose Aldo fight, the very first one, he circled entirely to his right and turned Aldo to the right. And then in the second fight, he circled entirely to the left and fought off of circling to the left. So it's like changed the direction of the fight both times and controlled it. And then also like his I think a lot of the checking of the kicks has to do with like the way his stance is. Right, he fought Jose Aldo, who is a leg kicker, and he did eat a few of those.
Jose Aldo decides to. Like,
that's true. Yeah. But then against Brian Ortega, he stood a lot taller, and like his feet a little bit, closer together, because Brian Ortega wasn't really a threat to go for the takedown. But in the Alexander Volkanovski fight, the very first one, that was one of the things that Volkanovski used to kind of defuse him, which was kicking the leg and beating him to the punch with the jab. But in the second fight, Holloway checked a lot of the kicks, pulled his leg back. He stood a lot taller. He made sure that he like wasn't very kickable at all. And so I think it's slightly overplayed that he can't check kicks. I push back. Like he changes things up quite a bit, fight to fight. It is always boxing, but like Yair Rodriguez, Arnold Allen, he was, you know, going for takedowns himself. He was showing a lot of like good top control game. But yeah, it's always been, he's always had kind of his style, but it's very flexible within that. And then also within the fight, right? I was thinking about this the other day when it came to like Robert Whittaker. A lot of these guys, they, when they get success with something, so like the body jab, then they'll just do that a bunch. But when something is not working, like, ooh, I really want to set up like, you know, a 2-3 combination, or I really want to get the uppercut going. A lot of these guys, when they don't have success with something, they don't really register that in the fight. They just keep throwing that, and then they might get tagged, but like they don't really change. Like I think about Robert Whittaker against Israel Adesanya, their very first fight, right? Mm-hmm. He never went to the body or the legs. He's like, I have to just keep lunging and trying to get this guy's head. The thing with Max is I see him, like, when he has success, he will alter his strategy mid-round to, like, capitalize on that. But then if something is not working, he won't also just keep hammering away at that. He'll try something different that's usually based off of that failure. So if he's been throwing leg kicks and they're getting checked, he'll fake like he's going to go to the leg and then go to the body, right? He'll use that reaction to draw something else out. Mm-hmm. So I think like he's actually no, I spit at the suggestion that he doesn't change. but I think he more than anyone in this division, besides maybe Volkanovski, he changes quite a bit round to round in every fight.
I guess more my pick of that is adjusting, not necessarily based off of what he throws, because I think his toolbox is extremely diverse, so that he can do more of those things. Like, oh, this leg kick's not working, but he keeps doing this, so I'll fake that and respond with another mm-hmm. thing. Like, I think his offensive toolbox is very diverse, but his evasive or defensive.
Yeah, he definitely, you're right. He definitely has been like a chin bully almost, right? He's definitely relied on like, I don't need to like,
durable.
Yeah, massively improve my defense, which is actually, because everyone's been pointing to the, well, hey, this will probably look like the Dustin Poirier fight against Max Holloway, where Max Holloway looked very underpowered and Poirier hurt him quite a bit. But the big thing that I rewatched that fight that stuck out to me was Poirier has a really good, defense, right? He's really good at the shoulder roll. He's really good about getting his elbows and forearms in the way of punches. And I think it was in between rounds 1 and 2 or maybe 2 and 3. Max Holloway goes back to the corner and says, like, he's defending really weird. Like, I can't hit him. Because Dustin was, like, rolling with a lot of the shots until it got later in the fight, and Dustin Poirier got tired. When he's fresh, he's really good at rolling, blocking things with his elbow, catching things with his rear hand as it's hitting the face, which is something Justin does not have, right? Yeah. Justin just kind of, like, puts his hands up kind of like earmuffs or, like, on his forehead and tries to just, like, meet forehead to fist as a way of evading. A lot of strikes, which with Max, that's not going to work nearly as well as what Dustin Poirier did.
Yeah. So in that case, I think it comes down to like power that Justin Gaethje has, you know, versus Max's durability and Max's like just unrelenting like pressure and volume versus Gaethje's like shield defense. Like which one cracks first?
Yeah. And I wonder, right? Because Justin, I mean, he's fast and he's able to get the timing really well. But if you watch the cadence of his fight, it's usually somebody comes in, throws a 1-2, and then Justin will like respond with a counter hook, right? Like if Max can get that timing really quickly, because they both have pretty good footwork, but Max has really good footwork to stay in the pocket and kind of move just out of range. I could see Max slowly picking him apart. Another thing is Justin Gaethje, like. Everyone talks about he's got really good takedown defense, and he does have good takedown defense, but he sells out so hard on every sprawl. Like, he fucking flings himself full force to the mat to get away from stuff. I wonder if Max can, not with any intent of succeeding, fake a couple of takedowns just to get Justin to fling himself to the ground in a sprawl. Because Justin seems so kind of like anxious and amped up anytime there's the chance that it might go to the ground, that I could see him in a way that him and Michael Chandler both do. They kind of almost self-destruct if you give them enough inputs, you know, like you give them enough stimulation, they just kind of like explode themselves trying to do it. But anyway, I don't know. I don't know. I also wonder, everyone's been making a big deal about Max bulking up. I don't know how much of that is like true bulk. I don't know. Everyone, not everyone. I've seen a couple of donkey brains online saying, you know, Max Holloway looked fat in his Dustin Poirier fight. He didn't look fat. He just didn't look like he cut any weight or he cut that much weight.
He looked but again, healthier.
Yeah, carrying around like slightly extra bulk, especially when you're a volume puncher, that could always, you know, your punches are bit slower. You know, it just becomes a little bit harder to have to be as fleet of foot. So I don't know. It's hard. I think Max is a live dog in this one. I really like. I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be happy if he won. But I do think Justin's firepower is like actually pretty insane. And Max has been struggling for a while. Like I think his decline is overplayed. Right? He beat Arnold Allen. He beat Yair Rodriguez. He's been beating every top contender basically that isn't Volkanovski. But seeing how easily he was picked apart, I know Justin and Volkanovski are very different fighters, but how easily he was picked apart by Volkanovski in the third fight, I think that like Max definitely has lost the step from where he was prime Max, and Justin Gaethje is not a good fighter to go up and like test your hand again at a new weight class, because he's just so potent. So I think Justin Gaethje, I think with inside three rounds, I don't think it'll be a submission. It'll be a TKO.
TKO? Okay.
Yeah, I think we finally see it with Max. All right, the last two. These are a lot easier to talk about. Okay. So women's strawweight title bout.
Hit me.
Zhang Weili and Yao Xiaonan. Give me it. What do you say?
You said you sound like you know exactly what you want to say.
Yao Xiaonan fought Jessica Andrade. Jessica Andrade famously can't cut the ring. Yao Xiaonan, very fast, was able to circle away. But every time she threw, it was not really while moving her feet. She would circle away, reset. They'd stand there for about 2 to 3 seconds, like Street Fighter characters, when everyone, or like the controllers aren't plugged in. And then she would hit her with like a really fast one too. Yao Xiaonan is really good at straight hitting. And then Jessica Andrade would march forward to try to meet that. Yao Xiaonan would just circle away. Jessica Andrade doesn't know how to cut the cage. And then they would just do that repeatedly, right? So it was very impressive that she was able to throw with the speed and the crispness that she had. And she's obviously very fast. But it really relied on Jessica Andrade not being able to cut the cage and kind of marching head first forward into punches without much head movement, which is just, if you're able to do that against Jessica Andrade, you'll be able to win. Zhang Weili can cut the cage. Zhang Weili is able to strike while in, like, moving her feet in transit. Like, she doesn't need to, like, stop, plant her feet, get ready, get the timing, and then throw. She also is able to wrestle pretty aggressively, and she's very, very strong. Yao Xiaonan, while she has improved, she still got out-wrestled by Carla Esparza, who's massively undersized. So I think Zhang Weili will be able to probably tune her up a little bit on the feet, and if it does get hairy, Zhang Weili should be able to take her down and probably get a submission within the first three rounds. So Zhang Weili submission, three rounds.
Zhang Weili. Okay. I like that a lot. To me, these two fighters have very similar backgrounds. They both come from like a Sun.
Just because they're from China, is that it, Colin?
Sure, but they both have like Sancho and Sanda, you know, backgrounds fighting there. So their stand up and their wrestling is decent. You know, it's above the average person coming in just doing boxing and just doing, you know, like learning those two skills separately, like boxing and wrestling, Muay Thai and wrestling, because it's all intermixed together within that sport. At times, I like in certain fights, I felt like they fought very similarly. Maybe it's because of that, but I think, yeah, like you said, Zhang Weili has a little bit deeper skill set. But if I were to pick an upset out of these, I think if I were to pick an upset out of the main cards, this is the one I would pick. I would say, I don't really know who's favored in the last one between Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway, but I think Zhang Weili is definitely the favorite in this one.
Yes.
But I think Yao Xiaonan has a punching chance to get the upset on this.
Damn. Well, just to for your information, Max Holloway is a +195 underdog.
Okay.
So
not significant. What is Yao Xiaonan in this?
I don't see the odds for that at the moment. I think they're about let me see.
Okay.
I don't know. Keep talking. I will tell you in a second.
But you say Zhang Weili by submission. The smart man in me says also Zhang Weili, but by decision.
Mm. Oh, yeah, Xiaonan is a +380.
Okay. Yeah, like, that's... All right, like, because of that, I'm going to say Yao Xiaonan by decision.
Yeah, that's the biggest spread on the card outside of the Nickel-Brundage fight.
Okay, wow. So you have finishes and everything, but I've got two back-to-back decisions right there.
I know. I mean, it's crazy to me that you think the lightweight fight, the Gaethje Holloway fight, is going to go decision. I mean, it's women's strawweight. The odds are forever in your favor if you just say it's going to be a decision. But I see Yao Xiaonan as kind of a glass cannon, and I think that coming up against Zhang Weili, she'll kind of crumple. Maybe not mentally, but I just think she'll be kind of physically overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Overall.
But yeah. I do like it, though. I do like that fight.
Yeah. No, all of these should be great. Yeah, they should be fantastic. Yeah, because, right, I'll be interested to see, right? Oh, that was one thing I forgot, too. Speaking of Yan Shan'an, great jab. Zhang Weili, not as good of a jab and can be troubled by the jab. Justin Gaethje forgets to throw his jab in almost every fight, but when he does, very good jab. So I'll be interested to see if he has it, right? If Justin can leg kick and go jab for jab with Max, then, like, if in the first round I start seeing that jab come out, I'm like, okay, well, it's fully Justin now.
Okay.
He just never remembers to throw it, or like he throws it in the last round of every fight. It's a very odd thing. You need somebody screaming at him in the corner to throw his jab. I mean, every MMA fighter needs that, because about 90% of the roster does not have a jab that they actively use. yeah. All right. The final one. The big
final big boy fight.
Hit me. Big boy fight. No, you go first. I've gone first on the last one.
All right. Alex Pereira, TKO or KO, second round.
And why do you say second round? Why not the first?
I think the first round will be a little bit of feeling out. Like, I think he'll start putting together his combinations, like starting to wear him down. And then he'll just like kind of figure out what's happened. And then like early in the second round, within like the first 2 minutes, just lay it on.
Okay. Now, what about Jamal Hill having a pretty decent jab and a pretty decent 1-2, like pretty good straight punching, which is, again, a rarity in the light heavyweight division because it's a lot of big dudes swinging bungalows at each other. it's not a lot of jabs and crosses.
Yeah, no. I think his skill set is solid. I think he's got some decent combination work, but I don't think it's at the level or the atomic punching power that Alex Pereira has.
That's true.
Like,
but Alex Pereira does keep his chin very high in the air, and yeah. His response to getting like swarmed, I rewatched that Jiří Procházka fight, is just to back up, like just on a straight line. It's not really even to circle out.
But it's one of those things, it's like a trap. Like he's baiting. And then he'll just fire off the giant stone cannon of his fist right down the middle as someone's walking in, and then blows them up. Like,
that's true.
Like, I think he can get away with that almost because he's just like, okay, if you're going to come in for this great juicy target, you're going to have to eat at least one of my shots. And I think he's willing to trade for that. And that's like, when you have his destructive power, like, one, that's very intimidating. And two, it's you can always just like sit on that.
That's true. I don't know if he'll be able to intimidate Jamal Hill, because Jamal Hill seems to be a little, I don't know. He takes umbrage with a lot of shit and a lot of small shit from every human on Earth, it seems. Getting into Twitter beefs with randos and like arguing with Ariel Helwani and like a bunch of weird stuff. I mean, I'll agree with you. I think Alex Pereira, second round.
Okay.
Get it done. The two things is, one, Jamal Hill blew out his or ruptured his Achilles.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you know how he did it?
Yeah, that fucking basketball game they had them do.
Yeah.
So like, stupid.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I mean, that's another thing. Everyone's like, oh man, dude, the fucking heavyweights here, or these light heavyweights are really athletic, and then you do see a lot of them just like step wrong and blow out their ankles. And then I watch basketball and I'm like, these are monsters running around. Like, my knees would blow out. And spoiler alert for everyone, I'm 5 foot like four. I'm tiny. these huge guys able to run up and down the court repeatedly and not have their knees explode is a marvel into itself. You could just remove the ball from basketball and it's still a very impressive physical feat. Anyway, he ruptured his lead leg. Achilles, right? And we all know Alex Pereira is going to kick your lead leg pretty hard. I don't know if rupturing your Achilles can be caused by like blunt force trauma, but I assume having injured that leg and then getting kicked at it, that's going to be something that is like a little bit psychologically like frustrating for Jamal Hill. Even if it doesn't like throw him totally off his game, he'll be a little bit more cautious of the kick. The other thing that I really am interested in is, in every fight where Alex Pereira is really getting backed up, his like his ability to be defensive or offensive when being backed up is, which is the case for most people, but it's really noticeable. It is almost negligible for Alex Pereira. Like, when Izzy would go forward, he would usually win the exchanges. When in most instances, when the opponent is moving forward on Alex Pereira, they're winning the exchanges. Same thing with Jamal Hill. Every time he was moving forward on Glover Teixeira, he was winning the exchanges. And every time Glover would actually come forward and throw punches, because I rewatched that fight with him and Glover Teixeira, there's a lot of times of Glover walking straight in and just like eating six jabs as he got closer to Jamal Hill. But the second he would throw a combination, he would always miss the first punch, and then the second punch would like almost always land on Jamal Hill. So it's one of these things where right off the bat, whoever is moving forward and whoever is consistently being the person pressing the action and throwing, like they can't just be walking straight forward, because we've seen Jamal Hill be able to kind of pepper people with jabs as they come in. I think that'll basically dictate the winner, which isn't a very insightful thing to say, right? Like usually in MMA, the person going forward and doing things wins, unless it's the Nick Diaz, Carlos Condit fight. But yeah, so I'll be interested to see that, because I could see Jamal Hill just coming forward and like storming out the gate and throwing Alex Pereira off his game. But yeah, I mean, I can't, he's coming back after a horrible injury. It sounds like coming back too quickly. He wasn't supposed to fight. And then like the day before the announcement or 2 days before the announcement, they told him like, hey, are you willing to fight on UFC 300? It wasn't like this long negotiation and discussion. Then right. They gave him a big check to take it. So I wonder, is he fully rehabbed? Even if he's been having the best rehab of his life, like sometimes it just takes time. And then to come back and your very first fight back is not a warm-up fight. It's right in there against Alex Pereira. I don't think that works well. And Jamal Hill is not a wrestling threat. So yeah, you got to pick Alex Pereira. Though his response to getting hit hard, Alex Pereira's, is not what I call ideal. Just backing straight up and just kind of like waiting for it to subside, which is not great. But yeah, Alex Pereira, second round. I agree with you.
All right. Well, that does it for our entire UFC 300 preview and predictions. We'll have to keep track of all of our points and see who will win. And we can discuss that in the next time after all of these events here. So, Any closing thoughts on UFC 300?
It's a good card. It looks like it's going to be a good card on paper. We know that UFC 200 was a good card on paper and kind of stunk, but this one has got so much kind of volatility. It's kind of like, I feel like we're just going to, it'll be either really sad or really exciting, but I feel like a lot of people are just going to get absolutely bodied on this card. So good one overall. This might be one of the few fight cards that I watch, like, actually from top to bottom.
I was going to say, yeah. I'm not going to just pop in on the main card. I'm definitely going to be, I think I'm going to watch, like, all day Saturday. This is what my Saturday is going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, so a good one. And then after that, eat it up, because there's not much for a few months after this. Pretty weak cards after this. So this is the big one.
All right. Why don't you sign us off again, as you always do?
All right. Well, this has just been two fight fans. I'm one of the fight fans, Stuart.
I'm one of the fight fans, Colin.
And next week, we will come back, kind of do a postmortem on UFC 300 and decide what terrible MMA film one of us has to watch and present like a third grade book report on.
I've got mine for you already.
Oh, shit. Well, save it, because I haven't dove into the full catalog of terrible MMA movies. But I might make you watch that Ben Shapiro written one with Donald Cerrone and Gina Carano.
Oh my God.
That's not a full MMA one. That's, a weird right-wing Western. But I think it might count. But I'm sure I can find something worse. Something straight to DVD.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.